Welcome back to the From the Sidelines podcast. I am Wade Evanson. We have our usual suspects here, Andrew Dekop, Austin White, and Jed Tai is back with us after a few weeks from Oregon Prep Hoops. Did I get that right? Jed is here, and we're going to talk playoff basketball. Obviously, some of it's in our rearview mirror, but this week is the big boys, if you will, the 6A and the 5A boys and girls state tournaments, which will kind of wrap the prep hoop season in Oregon this year. So what we're going to do is we're going to start to get right into Jed. We're going to start with the brackets, and we're going to go through them and talk about the games and maybe make some predictions. And then after we go through the brackets and such, Andy, Austin, and I will go through kind of what was in our coverage areas last week. But we're going to start with the basketball. And Jed, do you want to start by maybe talking a little bit about where you are with the state of prep hoops? I know we're all a little beat down at this point from covering basketball and everything for the last a handful of months, but this is it. This is what we all kind of wait for. We see the cream of the crop at the state tournaments. And are you excited? Are you ready to watch some good basketball this week?
Yeah, you know, this is, like you said, this is what we all kind of wait for here at the end of the year at the tournaments. And for the most part, all the top teams all advanced, all in 6A, 5A, and 4A as well. So, you know, we've got the cream of the crop here at the top. And yeah, let's get the ball rolling and see what happens.
Perfect. Well, why don't we start? Why don't we start with the 6A boys? And we can anybody can just butt in at any point and talk about what they would like to about these matchups. I know we're going to start here with the first matchup, which is a 1-9 matchup, which is West Lynn, number one West Lynn, who has kind of been number one all year, really, and taking on Central Catholic from the PIL. Maybe Austin wants to talk a bit about Central Catholic in this matchup. First of all, I mean, are you surprised that Central Catholic is here?
Austin, you are muted, my friend.
There we go. Fun time. Anyway, first off, Central Catholic, from the Mount Hood, not the PIL. Sorry, Wade.
Oh, my bad.
You're all good. They're in Portland, so it makes sense. But I'm not too surprised that they're here because I thought, you know, they ended up having to play Nelson at home, which I'm sure they enjoyed a lot more than having traveled to Medford. But even if they did have to travel to South Medford, I think they had a pretty good shot in that game. You know, South Medford obviously fell at home to Nelson. You know, South Medford's got two standout players, but just not too much depth, and that's kind of what Central Catholic has this year a little bit more. You know, last year was a lot of just kind of football guys who were also good at basketball, but now they've got more pure hoopers this year. You know, they've got the Paschel brothers, Isaac Carr. You know, they've got great Thompson. You know, all kinds of these guys that they can kind of rely on a little bit more. So I'm not too surprised. You know, them going against West Lynn. This is going to be brutal. You know, they're young. You know, that what makes West Lynn so good is they're obviously very talented, but they're also senior heavy. These guys have been around. Central Catholic, very young, you know, very talented, but very young. Their first time, all of them, being at the Child Center. So it's going to be a new experience for them. You know, I'm sure they'll give them a run at least, maybe for the first half. But, yeah, this is going to be tough for the Rams, this matchup.
Well, and I was there for that game against Nelson, the second round game. And, you know, in talking to a couple of the guys afterwards, I talked to Marley Zeller and Tony Angelo from Central Catholic. And, you know, you could kind of just tell that getting to the Child Center was sort of their Super Bowl. You know, that was the big goal, especially last year after losing to Mountainside. They, you know, they get this home game all of a sudden because they lost at home in the second round last year. So, you know, making it to the Child Center, you could kind of feel that that this was their national, you know, state title, basically. They know they have long odds against West Lynn. I mean, I talked to Tony Angelo about that specifically, and, you know, he said, look, we know it's going to be tough. We don't really match up the best with them, but if we can, you know, use some of our size, some of our, you know, quickness to our advantage, then we might be able to, you know, make it a game. But even just kind of hearing them talk about it, I think they see the writing on the wall. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Central Catholics can't still come out of this with a trophy, right? I mean, it's a pretty pretty darn good team, and they've got a nice kind of balance of scoring, at least when I saw them. That was the only game I've seen of them this year, but they had four guys in double figures. So, I mean, that's pretty nice to be able to do that. West Lynn also has depth and balance, you know, so it's going to be tough.
Yeah, and I think, too, West Lynn has Jackson Schellstad, and
Maybe burying the lead.
It was interesting. I was thinking about the last game they won. They beat Jesuit pretty handily, and Jesuit doesn't get blown out. We all know that. And a lot of it had to do with just Jackson just went completely nuts. They just had nobody to encounter him. And I think he's pretty determined. I mean, this honestly, a state championship's the last thing he needs for his resume. He's going to be player of the year again for the second year in a row. I think that's pretty much assured. He just needs a state championship. It cements his legacy with Oregon high school basketball history. So I think he's determined. I love David Blue and what he does there, and they've got a really talented team, but they're like, you know, you mentioned Austin, they're young. I think the fact they have Gray Thompson back, they're only senior late in the year after being hurt, that's been helpful. But yeah, I don't think this one's going to be very close, honestly. I think Westland's going to advance pretty easily.
Isn't it also the tough thing about Westland is, and real quickly, is that not only do they have talent, but they have that moxie, which a lot of coaches would describe them as is their best characteristic. I've heard coaches really kind of in passing mention their talent, like say, like, yeah, well, you know, I'll know that Jackson Schellstad is the best player in the state. We know that these varying players have a lot to the table, like on the court, but the fact is they're winners. So even if, you know, maybe they're not having their best game, if Schellstad is off, or if, you know, things aren't going in the basket, you know, from the field, they can overcome it because, you know, they're winners.
They're winners. You got the football guys who coming off the football wins as well. Let's not forget their head coach, Robert Key, is the only one in the field who has a 6A state title. He won that with Grant back in 2018. So, you know, they've got winners up and down, just all across the board.
And, you know, one guy who I think goes really underrated on this West Lynn team is Drake Gable. He's one of the senior starters. He's never going to lead the team in scoring. He's not going to be top three most nights, you know, maybe not even top five or six most nights, but he's going to go through. He's one of their tougher rebounders. I mean, he basically does all the same stuff that Mark Hamper does, maybe just not quite as much of it. But, you know, they've got a lot of those glue guys too, or you get even a guy like Sam Levitt, four-star quarterback, you know, leading the state title football team. But he knows his role on this West Lynn team, and he doesn't try to do too much. And, you know, Drake Gable, by the way, D1 baseball player who won a state title with them too. So there's another winner for you on this team. I mean, this is I think that's a great thing to point out too, Wade, is just these are kids who know how to win and are willing to do whatever, you know, take on the spotlight, step out of it, whatever, to get those wins. It's a pretty dangerous team.
Well, to me, Mark Hamper exemplifies that. Like I watched that guy last year at State and didn't know who he was. And he caught my eye just because he was so cool and collected. But he kind of has that air of confidence as well.
Yeah.
And I watched him play Tualatin a few weeks ago, I mean, I really, really like that guy in regards to he just doesn't seem to care about anything individually. He's about winning games. And
he's their Rodman.
And the thing is, he's capable. I mean, I think that guy is a capable 18 point a night guy. Because he's got a good grade. He can hit from three. He's strong, so he can do the dirty work inside. He can get rebounds and putbacks and things like that. But I watched him pass up so many shots in order to get a better shot, which every basketball coach, you know, preaches. But he seems to do, he not only does he do it, but he seems to be a willing participant. He's almost like not looking to shoot, but he will if he's open and he knocks him down. So for a guy with that as much talent as he has athletically, I've just always been impressed by kind of the way in which he goes about his business, which is, you know, it's not about me, it's about winning games. And to me, he does everything he needs to do in order to get that done.
And that's how you end up with the Mr. Hustle Award at the Les Schwab Invitational. You know?
Yeah, which to me, that's who he is. He's like, he's a hustle guy with talent. Because usually the hustle guys are the guys who maybe don't have the talent, so they have to get it done, you know, by means of hard work and hustle and things like that. But that guy he's that guy with the talent. So it's kind of nuts. So I think we all agree, Wes Lynn. It would be a minor miracle if Central Catholic pulled that off that upset. So we'll move Wes Lynn on, and then we'll go to Gresham Lincoln, which I've not seen Gresham. So anybody who has, I'm sure Jed has, actually probably all of you have seen Gresham at some point this year. But me being on the west side, I've not seen them. I've heard some good things, but Lincoln I've seen, and they're impressive, if not anything else, physically when you see them on the floor. But Gresham Lincoln, who wants to chime in first?
Yeah.
I was at the Gresham Benson game just most recently, which probably was the best game period, I think, in that round. It was 62-61. Gresham almost lost it because of some bad free throw shooting at the end. But this game is a really interesting difference of contrast. You got Lincoln, who's big, right? Gresham is basically four guards and one big. They have all four guards who can score, led by Isaiah Pipple-White, Scotty Riddle, RJ Alexander, and Marcus McKinney, and all four of them typically put up double figure points each and every night. And they just like to, you know, the head coach, Corey Lockhart, just likes to roll the ball out and let them run. They just love to run, get up and down the court. But, you know, Lincoln presses too. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this all comes about. You know, Gresham does not, I mean, they have 1'6", 7" kid. They have another 6'4" kid that comes off the bench, but they don't have a lot of size. So it'd be interesting to see just how they combat the size of Lincoln. But yeah, it's just, like I said, it's going to be an interesting contrast of styles. It's going to be a fast paced game. It's going to be a lot of scoring. But yeah, this should be a fun one. You know, I think one thing that's it's kind of like an underlying story with it all is head coach Heather Seeley Roberts. The beginning of her coaching career, she coached down at Ashland High School, and at Ashland High School, one of her players was her Jenny Pippa, who is the mom of Isaiah Pippa White. So there's like a family connection. They all know each other and everything, and so it'd be a little bit of a friendly matchup here with this. But yeah, that's kind of a little backstory with this game that's going to be also fun to watch as well.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, I didn't know that. Thanks for that, Jed. That's great. But yeah, I mean, but I think Jed nailed it. You know, 5-4, you kind of expect it to be a good matchup. I think it will. You know, the tough part for Gresham is, I think, in the Mount Hood, that kind of up-tempo style favored them, because really only kind of Barlow could probably match them and did. Lincoln, though, I mean, that's the PIL's. That's how everyone plays pretty much in the top team. So Lincoln, you know, I think is kind of used to that. You know, using their size with that full court press to slow some of these quick guards down that they see the PIL. And, you know, I saw Lincoln play Barlow earlier in the year. I think they played on MLK Day, and Lincoln was able to get that win. And, you know, Barlow is a team that beat Gresham twice. So, you know, when it comes to picking it, you know, I think Lincoln will get it done. But, you know, anything can happen when you've got great players like Pippa White and Moroni, Seeley Roberts. He's going to be playing out of his mind too. And, you know, seeing Lincoln last week talking with them, it seems like they're extremely motivated. You know, they got Cleveland, which was just the most fortunate thing, you know, the team that eliminated them last year, and they kind of took it to Cleveland. Really, it wasn't really ever that close. So you know, a team with 9 seniors like Lincoln has, it's gonna be tough. You know, they are extremely motivated. I think they're ready to get this done. You know, I know Gresham's got a handful of seniors too, but yeah, no, it's contrasting styles is going to be great. I think this will probably be best game of the four, but man, the next two are good games too. So,
well, we don't need to waste a lot of time on it, but Lincoln, in addition to having to overcome Gresham, has to overcome that a spectacle that was that dance fiasco at the end of their game. I mean, I listen, I'm not about picking on kids. Apparently that was inspired by their coach, if not enforced by their coach. And you know, it's made a run on social media so much, I think we can talk about it, but not great. Just not great.
No dancing at the Childs. They kick you off pretty quick, so none of that.
All right, well, So that's a really kind of a toss up. I mean, I think on paper, it's Lincoln is the favorite in that game. And having not seen Gresham, Lincoln's pretty impressive to me. So we'll see what happens there. But moving on to the 6-3 matchup, which is number 6 Beaverton versus number 3 Tualatin, which is a super interesting game to me. And really kind of a tough beat for Beaverton, I think. You know, a team that is really inspired, I think, this year, you know, from the beginning, has been eyeballing a state championship. And they struggled at times this year. I feel like they've maybe hit their stride a bit late. But playing against a team like Tualatin that doesn't appear to have any weakness on paper, but also a team that has played a lot of close games. You know, Tualatin is not a team that's been blowing people out of the water. You know, they you know, beat Tigard, I think, by four to six, I think, in the second round matchup. Gosh, does anybody recall who Tualatin played in the first round?
Roosevelt.
What's that?
Roosevelt.
Oh, that's right. And which was a game they were trailing by double figures in the game. So, you know, Tualatin has been walking a little bit of a tightrope, I would say, so far in the postseason. And Beaverton's a team that's good enough and you know, can give them everything they handle. But anybody have any thoughts on Beaverton Tualatin?
Well, you know, I think this is probably, along with the Gresham Lincoln game, probably the best matchup here in the first round of the state tournament. I mean, these two teams played earlier this year, and you know, Tualatin only won by, I think, 1 point at the Les Schwab. And you know, I think Beaverton is, you know, they came in with a lot of hype, like you mentioned, Wade, and there was you know, some struggles during the year, but they are playing their best, I think, right now. Especially Jalen Childs, I think he's been a bit motivated by the fact he wasn't named first team all state, and he's just been locking down guys like crazy. And so I would suspect he's going to be matched up against Josiah Lake, and it'd be really interesting to see how this one goes, because I think he's going to be very super highly motivated to really shut down Josiah as much as possible. The key might be if he's able to stay out of foul trouble. You know, I think one thing Josiah has been able to do is really get to the line a lot this year. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But you know, this is the kind of game where I know that head coach, Beaverton head coach Andrew Vansel, has probably been studying tape like 10 hours a day getting ready for this matchup. And probably, I know it'll be interesting to see if he, you know, this last year with no shot clock, maybe do everything he can to kind of slow it down, you know, and really sink back into their classic zone that they like to play, and not let this be a shootout like, you know, Tualatin probably would want it to be. I think this one is really interesting. And like you said, I think Tualatin is a little beat up from their first two games with Roosevelt and also Tigard. And, you know, those, not only Josiah Lake, but Jaden Stepp playing a lot of minutes. I could see Beaverton pulling this one out, honestly. It should be a very, very intriguing game.
Well, it's interesting you say that, too, because I have no problem seeing Beaverton potentially winning this game. You know, both of these teams are teams that I think are formidable. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about how Beaverton might want to slow it down. And I know in a lot of cases, you know, that's what they like to do. The interesting thing to me is when I've seen them this year, they've actually played some of their best basketball when they've played fast and when they pressured. You know, I saw that against Jesuit when they struggled in the first half and then came out and pressured in the second half, played without Chance Winters, or not Chance Winters, Chance, what's his, I'm drawing a blank on his last name. Is it Chance Winters?
Yeah, Chance Winter.
Yeah, Chance Winters. They're 6'11 post. You know, they basically benched him in the second half and they went small and they played significantly better against Jesuit. And I saw Tigard give Tualatin fits on multiple occasions this year, playing with what they only had was a small lineup, and they played fast. You know, they moved the ball up the court quickly. They got buckets in transition. And, you know, while Tualatin likes to play that way and wants to play that way, I sometimes wonder if maybe Beaverton is better playing that way as well. So I'll be curious to see, you know, how the style, you know, or stylistically how this plays out and what these teams try to do, more specifically Beaverton, for that very reason. You know, they have shooters. They have a great point guard in Jalen Childs, who, you know, I don't think gets enough credit this year. I, you know, I too saw he was second team All Metro, which raised my eyebrows a bit. But you know, statistically, that's how it played out, right? Because, you know, last year, I think he was a first team All-Metro player, but, you know, his numbers were significantly better because he played on a Sunset team that led him to shoot the ball 20 plus times a game. Whereas that's not his role in this year's Beaverton team, right? His role is to run the offense, and his role is to play defense, and it's to facilitate and things like that. And he's been great. You know, you mentioned Andrew Vansel, Beaverton's head coach. I mean, that's the first thing he'll tell you is that he couldn't be happier with the way that Jalen Childs has played this year. He's done everything he's asked him to do. He hasn't complained about, you know, taking less shots, and, you know, he's done his job. You know, and so I'm actually interested to see how he steps it up in the state tournament now that they're there and playing against a formidable opponent in Josiah Lake and Tualatin team that's defending state champions. And, you know, while they have a lot of guys back from last year's team, they also lost a lot of guys from last year's team. So they're a similar team, but they're also very different. So this is going to be a really interesting matchup and a game that I'm excited to see as well. And I honestly, I don't even know who I'd pick. I mean, I guess, you know, my life savings on the line, I'm taking Tualatin. But I wouldn't feel good about it, put it that way.
I think I'd take Tualatin.
Anybody have any more thoughts on that game?
It sounds like Jed was going with Beaverton, so I can help break the tie. I'll go Tualatin just because they might be tired, but I think Tualatin just knows how to win these late games. I think it's probably going to be another one with Beaverton, and maybe Josiah Lake hits some more late free throws to seal it.
Jed, are you going with Beaverton in this game?
You know, I was just thinking about how it was always interesting for me to make predictions because these kids tend to listen to these things, and then I hear about it. I still remember last year, I think I picked Summit to lose in the first round to Roosevelt. Then after, you know, Julian Mora hits that shot, he's running around the court. First thing I track him down, he's like, "Jed Ty, you didn't think we're gonna do it, did you?" It's the first thing he tells me. I'm like, "Oh my goodness, you know this." So
I didn't think they would either. I was picking Roosevelt in that game all the way.
But you know, I have a feeling I'll probably hear from some of the Tualatin guys. But no, I think I would pick Beaverton in this game. I think they're playing their best basketball, and then, like I said, I think Tualatin's a little beat up a little bit. It's going to be a great game, though. I think it's going to be a really great game.
It's funny you mentioned those predictions because last weekend I was at the 3A tournament, and one of the guys who runs that mid-major media, I forget the kid's name. He sat next to me. He sat next to me two days, and he mentioned that he had predicted, because he's also an assistant coach, I believe, for Pleasant Hill
Girls. Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And he took a beating because he predicted Banks. I think he was quoted as saying, actually, listen, I did the same thing. I love the Banks team and I rooted for them, you know, off the record. But on the other hand, I thought they were, for as number one seed, were very, very beatable, and they ended up winning the whole thing. But he predicted them to lose. He also said they were the worst number one seed I think he'd ever seen. And they hammered him. at that tournament last weekend, and they had the last laugh because they ended up winning, right? So it can be tough, but you know what? I like that. That's fine. You know, we make predictions, and it's all in fun. But they want to hammer you. They can hammer you.
Who was wrong?
Moving on to the last of the quarterfinal games on the boys' side, Mountainside and Barlow, which I will default to you guys for Barlow because I've not seen them, but I've heard good things. And Mountainside just continues to surprise me. I mean, I'm not shocked they're in this tournament, but the manner in which they do it impresses me because they have the best player in the Metro League, sophomore Braden Bowe. I think Dustin Hewitt has kind of proven himself to be a pretty darn good coach this year. And a lot of people wouldn't know the team around Braden Bowe just because. But they have some nice complementary pieces, and I'm kind of at a loss as to like what to think of Mountainside going forward because they've surprised me all year. So I'm not going to put a cap on them. But you guys want to talk about Barlow and maybe what you see in this matchup? Jed, you want to start with that?
Yeah, you know, this is the first thing that jumps out to me is just the great matchup in the backcourt with, you mentioned Braden Bowe, but then Barlow has their stud guard and Jalen Atkins. Both these guys are sophomores, too, so it's amazing we're going to see two more years of these guys as well. You know, this is going to be a fun game, I think. I think Barlow, you know, kind of has a little more, I guess, just traditional offensive firepower, not only with Jalen Atkins, but, you know, senior guard Jabari Martino, who's been playing really well as of late. They also got an athletic forward in Mason Bierbrauer. And they, too, have a whole bunch of seniors that kind of, you know, I've kind of talked about how every single game, you know, you can count on those three guys to do something, but there's always going to be, like, this mystery fourth guy who's going to step up and have a big game. I think lately it's been Nate Farrar. Who's been doing that, but you know, the other games, those other guys that kind of step up to the forefront, and he just gets great. Head coach Tom Johnson gets great production from these players. They've really bought into to playing their roles and supporting the top three. And I think, I don't know, to me, you know, it's always difficult for me on Mountainside because I am a Mountainside parent. So I'm pretty close with the program and the kids. You know, I've seen them since they were really little and things like that, but. I don't know. I just think Barlow has just more overall horses to win this one. I don't think they necessarily bring anything to the table that Mountainside hadn't seen before this season. But I just think I think Barlow just has a little more in their tank to advance.
Yeah, I'd agree with pretty much everything Jed said. You know, Barlow, I love their depth. You know, a lot of guys who can do a lot of things, rebound, shoot the three, different guys doing it on different nights. So. You know, Mountainside pulled. They won this game last year in this position and got to the semifinal. But I don't know. I think this Barlow team has got it.
Andy, you have any thoughts on Barlow?
I mean, just that I only saw them once this year, I believe, at the Les Schwab Invitational. But I would back up what Jed said. I mean, there's Jalen Atkins is awesome. Jabari Martino really stood out to me as an important piece on this team, though, too, kind of running the offense a little bit, facilitating, just kind of playing with a bit of grit, too. You know, that's always an important thing to have at this stage of the season. And yeah, I mean, I also thought I was impressed by Mason Bierbrauer. And I think that day, you know, Nate Farrar had a pretty good game. I think Ryan Bierbrauer had a pretty good game that day, too. So, you know, mostly just backing up what Jed said, that this is more than just a one team or one player team. And that at least in the game that I saw, you know, there were other guys who clearly have talent and can thrive in their roles while also letting a guy like Jalen Atkins really shine. So, you know, I think they're a solid team, and I would definitely pencil them in for a semifinal appearance at the very least.
Yeah. You know, I think I will say this about this Mountainside team. You know, I think, you know, some have said that this, you know, as talented as last year's team was, they made, you know, all the way to the semifinals and fifth place, that this team probably has even better team chemistry. And I would have to agree with that. You have a star and a sophomore, but they have just a tremendous senior class of players led by guard Blake Tooney and also their inside guy, Jalen Ormond, who is probably one of the top post guys in the state because he, you know, sticks to playing in the post, even though he might be a little undersized. But, you know, even if they don't happen to, you know, beat Barlow, I could see this team going all the way and winning the consolation bracket easily. They just a very, you know, fine-tuned machine type of team that plays really well. Like you mentioned, Wade, Coach Hewitt, so that I think it's done a fantastic job with this group. And, you know, what's scary is even though, you know, they got these seniors moving on, is they've got so many guys back that they're going to be probably right here again next year. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, and it's an interesting part about Mountainside is that you mentioned how many guys coming back. I mean, they're Quinn Havenman hasn't played since the first really month of the season, right? He got injured. He's out for the year. You know, and he was arguably their second best player. At least offensively, you know, and they've been without him for most of the year. And that's where, with this Mountainside team, I find it so interesting. And like with everything you guys have said about Barlow, and I take it all to heart. But the interesting thing about Mountainside is they just seem to overcome what conventional wisdom in a lot of cases. You know, they've done it to me numerous times this year. I mean, they beat Beaverton twice. They beat them at home. They beat them on the road. And you look at them on paper, and I can't help but like wonder how they do it, right? You mentioned Jalen Armand. I mean, he's a great inside player. I mean, he's that guy you want, right? He gets rebounds, he puts them back in, he plays defense. I mean, Dustin Hewitt will tell you, you know, he wouldn't trade him for anything. You've got guys like Blake Tooney, who's just kind of that solid senior guy who can knock down a shot if you give it to him, but he's also not going to make mistakes. You can trust him. And then you've got Brad Bowe, who, I mean, it's really incredible. Like, that guy is, as a sophomore, is so composed. And the thing about him that always impresses me is, it's not that he makes shots. It's not that he's athletic. It's not that he's got size. But it's that, you know, they give him the ball, like, in a full court press situation, they want the ball in his hands, and he always seems to make the right decision. So infrequently do I see Mountainside look frazzled under pressure, and that's really almost entirely because of him and him knowing what to do with the ball almost all times.
Yeah,
it really is impressive.
Yeah, and you got, you know, their other two starters. You've got the freshman Eli Visconde, who's just the money. He just goes straight to the corners and hits it almost every single time for three. Unbelievable shooter. And then their fifth starter is Peyton Reyes, who's just, I don't know if there's any kid who has a greater motor for his size, especially in the state, because he's just all over the place and both on both ends of the floor. It's going to win every single 50-50 ball, just really get after on defense, and and then surprise with some scoring sometimes as well. So they just have a really great starting five. I kind of worry a little bit about their depth, but you know, I've often said that, you know, at this point in the season, you kind of shorten your rotations anyway. But it's a great team. Win or lose, I think they're going to advance far.
Real quick, before we move on to the girls, who wins? I'm going to go right around the horn here. Andy, who wins?
Who wins it all? I'm going to say Westland.
Jed?
Westland.
Austin?
I want to say Westland, but I feel like that's just, you know, I feel like
classic Austin just has to pick against the rest of the group.
Okay, I do think it's Westland, but can I pick who might be the best choice? I'm going to say Barlow to get it done, potentially, and win a state title if it's not Westland.
Well, I'll take Westland.
I will point out real quick, Westland beat Barlow 87-60 on December 26th. So, you know,
it's a new year.
Maybe that puts a little fuel in Barlow's, in their behinds, but I'm not sure there's enough fuel to make up that 27-point difference.
It's a new year, man. You never know.
I'll take Westland to win it all, and I'll take, as a close second and as a potential sleeper, I'm shocked that Austin didn't bring this team up. I'll take Lincoln as my potential sleeper, which means they would have to have beat Westland in the second round. So let's move on. Instead of going to the girls, we're going to go to the 5A boys real quick. I think we can kind of skid through this one maybe a little quicker than we did the 6A. But who wants to start with the 5A boys? If we want to start right at the top, I'm trying to punch this bracket up right now. Right at the top, North Eugene Summit. I think it's a 1-8. Anybody have any thoughts on North Eugene? Or if you want to push Summit through with limited discussion?
I am happy to push Summit through. Pearson Carmichael, as far as I know, he was the first junior in the state to commit to a college. I might be wrong on that, and I'm happy to be corrected. But you know, it's a guy going to Boise State. It's not like some clown college somewhere either. That's a Division I Mountain West school, and he's a junior on that team, I believe. His older brother Hogan, who was the quarterback who led Summit to a state title, I think he's in there as well. I don't know Summit all that well. Austin, you saw them last year at the state championships, the 6A, right? I don't know how much of that team is back, but, is there anything that you saw from them last year that kind of stuck out to you that you think might apply this year?
I'm pretty sure most of those guys are gone. But okay. The other interesting note about Pearson Carmichael, too, committing is I think he committed before he ever even played a varsity game. If I'm reading Brian Rathbone's reporting, right, which was it, maybe Jed knows more about Pearson Carmichael, but.
Yeah, it was after last season. So, he had played with the team and kind of started making a splash at the state tournament last year. And that's kind of when things got going. So,
Yeah. So it's going to be his turn. I'm going to say Summit. Push through Summit.
All right. Beat it, North Eugene. You're out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything. I don't know too much about that North Eugene team, but if I don't know anything about them, maybe that means they can't beat Summit. Who knows?
Yeah, I would say Summit is definitely the favorite here. I think North Eugene is a really solid team. You know, they beat Churchill and they won the Midwestern League, which is traditionally a really great league in the 5A ranks. You know, they've got some pretty nice players with Joey Banry and Jonas Spencer and some other guys. But I think Summit just has overall more. You know, we mentioned Carmichael. They also have Colin Moore, who's a really talented guard, and just they have a whole host of guys. That are just, you know, they're deep and they're talented and, you know, they've kind of been there before the run they had last year. And I think they should be able to advance in this one.
Quick question about North Eugene, and fine if you don't know this. I just looked at the roster real quick and I see that there is a senior with the last name Kitzhaber. Do you know, is he related to John Kitzhaber?
I don't know, you know, okay. That's a big question. I wonder that.
Does he play in jeans?
I don't know. We'll see. Somebody's gonna have to go to that game to find out.
All right. Kitzhaber aside, Mountain View Redmond. It's a 5-4 matchup, which we all typically think are great. Thoughts on Mountain View Redmond? Anyone? Bueller?
It's a league Otten game.
Is back.
What'd you say, Andy?
I said Evan Otten is back. Redmond's big guy. I saw Redmond last year against Madras, I believe, like at the start of the season. And I mean, that was already going to be kind of a bad matchup anyway. But I believe it was Otten who really kind of showed out, and just a big kid who just overpowered everybody inside, you know, from Madras. But I think he's kind of kept that going and, you know, can do that against the 5A guys, too.
Yeah, this one's interesting because I just looked up the season records, and Redmond won all three matchups this year. Last two, only by a point apiece, but I think both games, Otten might have been out. Really tough to beat a team four times in 1 year. I guess we kind of did see that at the 3A tournament, but I just, you know, I think Mountain View is led by the coach's son, head coach Bob Townsend's son, Quincy Townsend, who is probably going to be, you know, first team All-State 5A, just a really talented guard who can really score. He had like 37 points in their opening playoff win against Ashland. I think he'll be ready to come in and really gun away and really score some points. If they can get some help from him, guys like Nathan Hoisington or Ian Prichter inside, that, you know, both those guys will battle Otten down low. I think Mountain View could pull this one out. I think they've got the talent to do it, and they've got the motivation, right, to win for the first time in four games. So that'd be my pick. I think Mountain View can do it.
Moving down the bracket, number 6 Woodburn versus number 3 Wilsonville. This is two teams from our some of our coverage areas. Thoughts on Woodburn Wilsonville?
I mean, I will say Wilsonville is a really, really solid team. They've had a couple confounding results from this season that kind of put a little bit of doubt into my heart, you know, seeing them in the final rounds here. You know, this is a team that kind of lost. They lost at home against a Canby team to snap a really long home winning streak. They lost on the road to a Milwaukee team that didn't make the playoffs. I mean, Logan Law is a heck of a guy, a heck of a player for Milwaukee. And he, you know, I guess I didn't see that game, but it sounds like he sort of willed them to victory there a bit. But, you know, I wonder kind of how susceptible Wilsonville is to those sorts of things. I will say the Canby game, Kyle Counts wasn't playing. So that's a big deal. When one of your three major stars is not in the game, especially your biggest one, you know, in terms of size, that can affect you because Canby didn't really have anybody with a ton of size. I mean, they got Trevin Slagle, who's the big guy there, but I think that it would have gone a little differently had Wilsonville been at full strength. But yeah, I don't know. Woodburn is a solid team. Spencer Carsonboom is a heck of a guy. He can when I saw him last year in Madras live, he was already a pretty confident scorer, shooter, went out, kind of got his shot. Last year, Andres Feliz, I believe, was a guard, kind of running the point there. Now I believe it's his younger brother, Cruz, who's running the show. Coach's sons there as well. So, you know, I don't have a ton of experience live seeing Woodburn this year, but I know that they have solid pieces throughout that team that can maybe keep up with, you know, Maxim Wu, Callan Guttridge, and Kyle Counts for Wilsonville. But Jed, what how about you? What do you see in this one?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned those three guys, and you know, I haven't seen the raw statistics, but every time I've seen Wilsonville and, you know, get their scorebook and stuff, I mean, those three guys represented probably 85-90% of all their stats. You know, right. I mean, those three are pretty key, and you know, they're really probably three of the best in the state, honestly. So, you know, they're going to do their thing. I think maybe if a fourth guy, you know, is able to do something, you know, maybe I don't see Woodburn as necessarily the team that's going to knock them off here. I do like this Woodburn team. A guy that I think is a real X factor for him is Liam Slatham. He's 6'8". He's a good interior guy who can not only score and rebound, but, you know, block shots. And, you know, he can kind of be an X factor, as I think. But I just think Wilsonville, just in general, just, you know, they're the defending champs. Right. I think this is the round that they're going to go out in.
All right, so we'll push Wilsonville ahead there. And then, let's see.
Well, the last game is, you know, the upset bracket, which is, you know, Crescent Valley defeated number two Churchill, I believe, last week. Last weekend in the second round matchup. So as the 15 seed, they're playing the number seven in LaSalle. So, you know, obviously LaSalle was, you know, one could argue that was a gift to them, you know, having to play the 15 opposed to having to play the two. But, you know, there's a reason that Crescent Valley won the game. So anybody have any thoughts on Crescent Valley LaSalle?
I really like LaSalle as a team. They've got a great energetic coach with Sean Kelly. He's got a really great group. He's got a star player in Nick Robertson's, great shooter and scorer. Also, he's a good rebounder as well. The number two guy, Finbar O'Brien, I think is one of the more underrated guys in the entire state because he pretty much does everything. He plays some serious lockdown defense as well. And they just have a whole cast of characters. I think he's probably the deepest team in 5A, maybe outside of Summit, because they just have so many different guys that he plays and that can come in and do something. You know,
right, you have a guy like Vance Sheffield coming off the bench. You know, that's not bad.
Yeah, exactly. Him or Carson Frick or, you know, his own son Aiden Kelly will come off and have some big games. They've got some size with not only him, but Grant Ellison, who's healthy now and he's playing. They just have a great team. And, you know, to some degree, I think it's interesting because there was some controversy about Crescent Valley getting in as a number four team, getting the tiebreaker. And, you know, the Midway Lamont ended up getting five teams in instead of four. And so they were kind of the team that kind of got slotted in and they ended up winning. So it kind of proves, I guess, they belong. But, you know, they've got some talented players, Adam Tomeskin and also Rocco McClave, the quarterback on the football team. But I just think LaSalle's just too deep and too talented to bow out in this round.
And it sets up so nicely for a great LaSalle-Wilsonville rubber match, right?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I think if you like the sport of basketball, you want to root for this, you know, to have Wilsonville and LaSalle Prep, I think, meet again in the semis. I imagine that will be, if it does come to pass, that will be a great game and a very intense one.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have your semis. The top would be your IMC battle and then the bottom.
Oh,
would be your
right.
Yeah, so that'd be fun to watch.
So winners.
Winners?
Who's got who to win? I'll start. I'm just gonna throw it out there because I've not seen a lot of these 5A teams. I'm gonna go Chalk. I'll take Summit. Although I was almost talked into LaSalle by you guys and how highly you spoke of them. However, I can't be moved because I'm an Oak, so I'll take Summit.
I think.
Go ahead, Andy.
Okay, I'll go. I'll be the one to do it. I'll take LaSalle. Screw it. You know what? I will ride the Falcons. I talked to Nick Robertson back at the start of the year. They were one of the first teams I saw this season. just I just really like that group. I've seen them a couple times now. I think that they, you know, I don't know that they would necessarily ever be the number one team, you know, like I don't know. There's just something about this team that I like, that I think they can put three games together at Gill. So I'm going to go with LaSalle.
Yeah, I will also join in chalk, even though you're trying to convince me, Andy. I'm going to go Summit. You know, they lost quite a bit from last year, but they still have plenty back, it seems like, from going to a 6A title game. So, plus, I'm still just not convinced Summit as a school should be in 5A. So I'm going Summit. But Andy, I will say I think LaSalle Prep is who they play in that title game.
I'm going to go with Summit as well. I kind of learned my lesson picking against them last year, and I picked against them, I would hear about it again from a different person. But no, they're just the most talented team. They have the best, I think, the best player with Pearson Carmichael there, and he's, you know, now he's the lead guy, and it's scary too because, you know, so many other guys, including him, are going to be back next year as well. So. But yeah, I think the Storm will capture it.
All right, well, let's move to the 6A, back to the 6A, I should say. So we'll go 6A girls, start that bracket out with the 1-8 matchup, which is Jesuit versus Austin's Willamette team. Thoughts on Jesuit Willamette? I know, Jed, I know you don't see a lot of girls basketball in this state. Do you have any thoughts on this, or do you want us to keep you dead in the water on the girls?
No, I can chime in. I saw a little bit this season, especially the top teams. You know, with Jesuit, they've got the, you know, a person that I think that's going to be player of the year in Sophia Bell, right? And she's just an incredible player. Everything I've heard is, you know, Willamette's probably a little happy to be there. Jesuit is the powerhouse. They've played everybody and kind of beaten everybody. I just don't see how, you know, they don't advance in this one.
Yeah, I mean, Willamette, I guess, took it to me by beating Oregon City. when I said they shouldn't even be an 8 seed, I still stand by that. But, yeah, they're not going to beat Jesuit. If Jesuit doesn't win by 20-plus, I'd be shocked.
20-plus. Wow. Going out there. I mean, I'll take Jesuit. I'll take Jesuit. There's no way I'm going against them. Regardless of who they're playing in this first round. I haven't seen Willamette, but I've seen enough of Jesuit to know that they're loaded, you know, between, you know, Sophia Bell, who Jed mentioned, Emma Sixta, who's also a first-team All-Metro player at the point guard, and who their coach Jason Lowry will tell you is one of the best, if not the best point guards in the state. And then they've got, you know, a legitimate big in Kendra Hicks, who's a 6'1 junior, who also Jason Lowry will tell you is one of the few people in basketball anymore who not only accepts her role as a big, thrives, and wants to be a big. You know, she's not somebody who wants to be in the perimeter. She wants to be on the block. She wants to be muscle people out. She wants to get rebounds. She wants to get putbacks. So between those three, you've got a nice trio of first team All Metro talent. And then you've got a lot of people around them that are just really good basketball players. You've got Tessa Randall, who plays just incredible defense on the perimeter. She's kind of long. She's 5'10, real athletic. She's a lacrosse player as well. So she brings a lot to the table for them on the perimeter, especially defensively. And then, you know, senior Avery Edwards, another great complimentary player, if you will, who just is a knockdown shooter. She's great from the 3-point line. You know, then there's just people kind of around, like they just have a really good team. They've also just gotten significantly better as the year's gone on. Obviously, they had to mix Sophia Bell into the equation this year. I know she came over last spring to Jesuit from St. Mary's Academy, and she played in the summer. But, you know, it's a little bit different animal in the regular season to try to get things meshing and flowing the way you want with a team that's used to playing with each other. And they've hit their stride. There's no question about it. And I think they're excited to get to this tournament. I'm excited to watch them. So without having seen Willamette, I am not fearful of Jesuit losing this game at all. Sounds like we're moving on. Let's go to Beaverton Clackamas. This is might be in Andy's wheelhouse with Clackamas. I know he's high on them. He's disgruntled Clackamas
cover, if you will, due to their number five seed. And this is kind of a bummer, I think, if you look at the way these seedings played out, because you've got a Beaverton team that is the defending champions at the four seed. And then you've got Clackamas, who I think more people than not would say is the best team in the state with Jesuit. So a four and a five. Andy, you want to start things off? Talk about your Clackamas team.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, like you said, you know, it you're stacking three of the best teams in the state on the same side of the bracket here. And, you know, so, hey, we're getting a hell of a game in the quarterfinals. You're getting a semifinal level game in the quarterfinals here, I think, between Clackamas and Beaverton. Man, Clackamas has been very impressive almost every time I've seen them. There was one game that I did see them lose. Against Camas at the POA Holiday Class or that tournament, whatever they were calling it. You know, in a game that they were up comfortably and sort of took their foot off the gas and let Camas come back in and beat them. Obviously, you can't do that. And I think they learned their lesson. They beat Camas in a rematch later on in the season, you know, albeit in their home gym rather than at Lincoln or Franklin or wherever we were. But, you know, I think there's absolutely no question that this team is talented enough to win state titles. I mean, you have the best sophomore in the state, maybe the best player in the state, arguably, in Jazzy Davidson. You have just an embarrassment of riches on this team. Seniors like Ryan Mogul running the point, but also sharing those duties with Avery Peterson, who's really stepped up this year. Eliza Burke in the post. You know, you got Eliza Burke and Ryan Mogul. These are Division I players. Eliza Burke's going to Davidson. Ryan Mogul's staying in town and going to UP. You know, so you've got that. But then you've also got shooters like Sarah Barhum and Allie Roden, who came over from West Lynn. You've got the other two Mogul sisters, Reese and Dylan. It's wild. You know, you see them bring in players, and you kind of wonder, wait, is this the starting five? Who are the five best players on this team? And really, it's whichever five are on the floor right then. They seem to be incredibly, incredibly good. I mean, it's worth noting too that Camas team they lost to is, I believe, at least at the time, they were the number one team in Washington, you know, in big school Washington. So, you know, that is also worth noting. That wasn't just like some random scrub team they let back in. You know, they were going up against one of the best in the area. And then they paid for a mistake. And I think, you know, one thing that Corey Landolt, the Clackamas coach, talked about at the start of the year and, you know, reiterated it now, is that, you know, this team just kind of needs to keep maturing through the year. The talent is not the question at this point. It's a team that is really sophomore heavy in terms of its talent. Do they have the, you know, the mental wherewithal, I guess, or the maturity to go through and to excel in a three-game tournament? You know, obviously five games, I guess, if you go back to those rounds. But now we're in the quarterfinals. This is a three-game tournament, three-game season. Do they have, you know, the mettle to kind of push through and live up to the expectations? I certainly hope so, but I don't know a huge amount about this Beaverton team, other than it seems like whenever they go up in a huge matchup, they haven't won in it. But maybe I'm thinking of the boys team. So Wade, set me straight on these Beaverton girls.
Well, Beaverton is interesting from the standpoint that a lot of people think that they're a similar, if not the same team from last year, and they're really not. Okay. The three core players are all from last year's team, and they were, you know, three of the four best players on the team last year as well. So you have Zoe Border, you have Lainey Spear, and you have Maddie Narrow, who are all seniors, you know, and all, you know, all league and if not all state, borderline all state players. So those three were significant contributors last year, and they're all back. So in that regard, they're the same. However, they play differently. And if you watch them play, they are a different team from last year. And their coach, Kathy Nero, will be the first person to tell you that, just because some people have had to step into different roles. You've got young kids have to try to fill the shoes of somebody like Emily Rice, who I think I myself have seen the value in her now, as now that she's gone, because she was kind of the glue that held a lot of this team together, in addition to playing good defense and making three-pointers. You've had people step up, especially, I think, late in the year, which I think this team is better now than they were 6 weeks ago, because some of these girls have grown up a little bit. Girls like Indy Browning, who has had to step into more of that kind of outside shooting, you know, give you 6, 8, 9, 10 points a game type role. Faith Meyer has been kind of a post player that's had to be, do some of the dirty work inside, and she's kind of come into her own a little bit as well. Jaden Lutu is a senior who was there last year, who is undersized, but somebody who can knock down three-pointers. She did that last year for them, and she's been asked to do that a little bit more this year. So I think this is a team that is definitely better now than they were. And I watched them play Jesuit a week and a half ago now, and you know, they took them to the wire. I think they lost the game by 1 point at Jesuit. So, you know, this is a team that's capable of beating really anybody in the state on a given day. But I think they are a lesser version of what they were last year because of that Emily Rice loss. I just they don't seem quite the same. But I think some of that has to do with, I think that maybe the competition's got a little better. We've seen that with some of these teams, like a team like a Clackamas that was really good last year, but all those girls who were freshmen last year are a year older, a year better. They have some additional players. They're deep, obviously. Jesuit got a lot, you know, a ton better with Sophia Bell coming in. You know, she's might end up being the state player of the year. She's a McDonald's All-American, you know, so that's a big thing. So the Beaverton is a very good team, and, you know, it's they're not to be trifled with, if you will. If you go in there and you play poorly, then they're going to beat you. Whether they'll be able to beat Clackamas or not, I think the betting odds would suggest no, but I don't think it would be, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Beaverton won this game, not in any way, shape, or form. Jed, do you have any thoughts on this game before we move on?
Well, the first thing I thought of is, you know, I went to the game when they first played during the season where Clackamas went to Beaverton and won, but you know, Andy kind of mentioned this. I mean, this is a talent evaluator's dream. On the floor, you're going to have at least six or seven Division I players playing at all times. I mean, I'm sure, you know, some of the college coaches who seasons have ended are probably going to be making the trip to watch this game, because I think there's obviously Jazzy Davidson, number one player in the sophomore class in the country, but, you know, so many other recruitable girls. And you got, you know, the three you mentioned there on Beaverton all signed early with Spear, Narrow, and Zoe Border, Division I school. So just a wealth of talent. It's going to be, I think, a fun game. I'd have to go with Clackamas based on, you know, everything you guys have said. But yeah, it should be a fun one.
Austin, any thoughts on this game, or do you want to move on?
Just the one thought to touch on the grand scheme of things. You know, seeing Beaverton last year, they do know how to pass the ball really well. And what I mean by that is they get up early, they could run out the clock. So it's interesting. Their games last year where I think they scored maybe in the 40s. So, you know, I think Beaverton's good about controlling that clock. If they get an early lead, it would be interesting. You know, that's not going to happen anymore starting next year with the shot clock coming. But yeah, Beaverton knows how to run that thing down. So we'll see.
All right, next game is a 6-3 matchup. Barlow is the sixth seed. They're the runner-up from last year's state tournament. And Tualatin is the three seed. Tualatin girls team, who I've kind of said for quite some time now, has kind of flown under the radar a little bit in the girls' side of things in Oregon this year, but I think have come a little more into the limelight of late. They only played Jesuit relatively tough here a couple weekends ago. And they're the three versus the six. Any volunteers who wants to start with this game? I know Barlow's one of your teams. Andy, did you want to start with them? Or actually, are they one of your teams?
At least Barlow's not one of my teams, but I did see them recently. I saw them, unfortunately, not do super well. So there might be somebody who has a better take on the team. I mean, Kennedy Schuler, I think, is where you start with Barlow. Senior guard who's going to Oregon State. You know, I think this team likes to slow it down a little bit more. I know that when they first played Clackamas earlier in the season, that was like a 50-42 game. I think they tried to slow roll it a little bit. When they played Clackamas again, when I saw them on the, a couple weeks ago, you know, they ended up in the 40s. Clackamas ended up with 75 points, though. So, I don't know. I don't have a fully formed opinion on this Barlow team because I'd heard so many I'd heard a lot about the strength of this Barlow team. And then when I saw it in front of me, you know, I just kind of, it paled in comparison to what I was seeing on the other side of the court. I will say, you know, Kennedy Schuler does appear to be a very, very, she's got a really good head on her shoulders, I guess, and toughness and grit running the point there. But I did not see the, like, state title contender that I think some people have seen in Barlow. So I can't really speak to their chances too much, but maybe that's just, you know, a long way of saying I'm going with Tualatin in this game.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Barlow last week playing Benson and I was, you know, you guys know, I picked Benson to go a lot farther and they did not, obviously. So, you know, Barlow was super impressive and part of it was, you know, Kenny Schuler. I mean, she got a cramp late in the game and she was on the side, literally drinking mustard, right out of the thing. Just, she was doing everything she could to try to get back in. And she ended up not really needing to because Annie Koenig was, hitting shots from the line. She was hitting threes. You know, that's Barlow's thing. You know, they've got these talented shooters on the outside. You know, they don't have too much size, which, you know, I saw Tualatin for a half against Forest Grove, so I kind of saw the size that Wade has talked about. I think that's going to be the issue for Barlow. I think they're very talented. They'll keep it close, but I think ultimately that size for Tualatin is what's going to get it done because, you know, Barlow did have some girls foul out against Benson, you know, some of their bigger girls. And, you know, Benson's got Mahogany Chandler Roberts, who's giving them problems, but that's really only one girl. Tualatin's got a couple of them. So, you know, I think Kenny Schuler and Koenig will keep it close, but I think ultimately Tualatin will find a way to get done.
Yeah, I didn't see either of these two teams play, but I just pulled up their schedules on OSAA, and the first thing I noticed about Tualatin is, wow, they play some serious defense. I mean, sometimes there's a, you know, there is a big difference between the haves and have-nots in girls basketball, especially in the state. But so you see, you know, teams that only score like 10, 15 points is sometimes not uncommon. But I'm looking at some of these teams that they really held down. I mean, they beat Lakeridge 47-10. Lakeridge, I know, has a Division I guard in Keely O'Halloran who can score that in a quarter. And so that says a lot to me that, you know, they're really locking down on teams. And their only two losses are to Jesuit by four and to the was mentioned before, Camus, who I looked up, ended up finishing a runner-up at 4A level in Washington this past weekend in the championship. So, yeah, this to me, it almost seems like, you know, I know Barlow likes to get a few more points on the board, but it's going to be a defensive battle. I think it's going to be played more at the pace that Tualatin wants to play.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Jed. I mean, that's exactly right. Tualatin, their team is built around defense, and this game, I think, will come down to simply can Barlow score, because you know, that's what Tualatin does. They hold you down with their size, their athleticism, and defense. That's their identity. It's been that way from the beginning, and they're really good at it. So, you know, if you're going to beat Tualatin, you're going to have to beat their defense. And, you know, Jesuit did it, but they think they scored, what, 37 points in that game? I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, and you know, that's the best team in the state on paper. So Tualatin is, again, a team that's going to be a difficult out for anybody. So that game, I also will say that tends to lead to what some might call an ugly game. So, you know, if you're looking for aesthetically pleasing, Tualatin is probably not your team, but really good. And again, I feel like a team that's been a little underrated throughout the year and a team that I would be really interested to see advance and play, you know, whoever it is on that other side of that bracket, which we already talked about a little bit. But in some ways, it's a shame that top half of the bracket there is so stacked, mm-hmm. because you're going to lose some teams early, for sure.
One other thing just to note about Barlow, you know, their five losses on the season, they, besides the one against La Jolla Country Day, you know, their four losses, I guess, then against Oregon schools, they didn't crack 50 points in any of those losses. So, you know, if Tualatin can hold them to a really low scoring number, then, yeah, I think that's going to bode well for Tualatin and bode poorly for Barlow. So another little feather in the cap from looking at the schedules there.
Well, moving on to the final game in that 6A bracket, which is number 10 West Salem versus number 2 South Medford. I've not seen either one of these teams play. I saw South Medford last year. I'm familiar with a couple of their players. Donovan Hunter, obviously, I think is an Oregon State commit, really good player, and one of, I think, just three seniors on that team. I mean, that team has six seniors on their roster. I'm not sure how many of those six freshmen on that roster, and you know, that's an interesting dynamic. I'm not sure how many of them play, but you know, South Medford's a team that's taking a little bit of a beating on this podcast, I think, throughout the season. I mean, primarily because we don't see them much, right? I mean, if you look at their schedule, I think they lost to Beaverton earlier in the year by, I think, 8, but I that's, to me, a bit of a black eye on their resume, only because Beaverton wasn't playing their best basketball earlier in the year, and they still managed to beat them by 8. Now, having said that, South Medford might be a little different team now than they were early in the year as well. So maybe this team's really good, and I'm not trying to really dump on them, because I am open to the idea that maybe they're really good. But having not seen them, with them being, you know, 200-plus miles, or I guess 200-ish miles away, you know, I'll be curious to see how they look this week, because, you know, they're playing a West Salem team that's, you know, in a 10. So I don't know what to think of them a whole lot. But then, you know, in a potential second round matchup, they would see either a Barlow or a Tualatin. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out for them. They are the number 2 seed, which you could argue, but having not seen them, it's tough to make a legitimate argument. Anybody have any thoughts on either of these teams?
Okay, so West Salem lost a few games in the earlier portion of the season. I mean, they went undefeated in their league, but there's some losses that give me some pause about taking this West Salem team any further. They lost to Oregon City. They lost to Willamette. They lost to West Lynn. You know, I think West Salem maybe getting to this part, you know, going and beating Grants Pass and making it to the Child Center, maybe a little bit like the Central Catholic of this girls bracket. Getting here was probably the big deal. At this point, anything that comes next, I would imagine, is going to be, you know, sort of found money. But yeah, I would go with South Medford in this one.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, yeah, I think, you know, in South Medford, you have an experienced coach who's been there before with some talented teams. You know, Wade, you mentioned Donovan Hunter, probably one of the best players in this, left in the field as well, Oregon State signee. yeah, I think just, you know, a lot of times, and this goes with the boys too, you know, we just don't see a lot of them. So they just sitting there racking up wins, and you don't really know how good they are. But I think this is one of those teams that I think people know how good they are, especially with the other teams in the bracket. And I would imagine, you know, like Andy said, I think West Salem's kind of happy to be there, and I think this is going to be a pretty easy win for South Medford.
Austin, any thoughts?
Give me South Medford by 25 or more.
All right, yeah. So who's winning it all then in the girls 6A bracket?
You brought it up. You start.
All right, I'll start. I'm running with Clackamas. I have no reason to jump off that train at this point. The teams that are in front of them, I believe they have wins over just about all of them. As long as Camas doesn't show up in this bracket at some point, I think Clackamas is just fine. So, yeah, they haven't lost in the state yet. I'm not going to pick them to start now.
I'm taking Jesuit. And I take Jesuit only because I'm gonna ride with experience. That's what I'm going to ride with. Sophia Bell, experience and maybe hunger.
I think, you know, as seniors, I think, you know, Sophia Bell wants this. She came to St. Mary's Academy last year, which didn't have much success. And she's been kind of hungry all year. So between her and Emma Sixta, I think that they want it. And I think that they feel like that they can do it. I feel like they're confident in their ability. They want it. I mean, this is their goal is simple, and it's to win a state championship. And as good as Clackamas, I believe, is, and as talented as they are, I think Jesuit's experience might get them over the top in that second round.
I like Jesuit too. I think they have, like you mentioned, the best player in the field, Sophia Bell, player of the year. Not say the best player, but I think it'd be the player of the year. And especially in that the projected semi we have with them against Clackamas, they've got some motivation having lost to Clackamas earlier this year. And looking at here, it wasn't even that close of a game. So I think they're going to be very motivated to come out and win that game and then kind of take it from there in the finals. So I'm thinking the Crusaders as well.
Man, I still don't know which way I want to go. It's either Clackamas or Jesuit for me. You know, last year I thought Clackamas was going to come in and kind of run the table, and they did not. And I just don't know if they can this year, because Jesuit, I think, has Sophia Bell. Similar to what Jed said earlier about Jackson Shellstad, this is kind of the last thing she needs. You know, McDonald's All-American, all the accolades. She's going to Oregon. Like, I don't know. And I feel like that's what was missing last year from Jesuit. You know, I saw them in some consolation games that, you know, just didn't look like they wanted to be there, which is understandable. It's consolation games. But this year, if they've got that motivation, that's tough. So I don't know. I think I've been convinced to pick Jesuit over Clackamas. Andy's shaking his head.
Do your thing, guys. That's a good point. I'll be the right one. You guys can all be wrong. That's fine.
It's a good thing we're recording this. All right, do we want to go through the 5A bracket real quick, girls' side?
Yeah.
I bring nothing to the table when it comes to the 5A tournament, girls. I've seen zero. I saw Hillsborough, and they're far from in the state tournament. So maybe we should just, if anybody wants, rather than break the games down one by one, just tell me who you guys think might win, and if you've seen somebody and or were impressed by someone, let her rip.
I think it's mostly Andy in this one. He's got the only two teams I've.
Yeah, so I saw Putnam this last weekend. You know, after watching that team beat North Eugene, it was right. Yeah, sorry, all these games are kind of bleeding together at this point in the season. You know, Putnam, they had to come back a little bit in that one, which was a little disconcerting, you know, hosting the 13 seed. You kind of want that to be a game you blow them out and you go into the Gill Coliseum with some extra fire behind you. They started a little slow. They weren't really hitting their shots, but they locked down on defense in the second half. They started hitting their shots in the second half. I really like the leadership on this team. Coach Max Duvern is he's really good as well, but the on the floor leadership from seniors Kayla Casabucci and Emma McDonald was really impressive to me. And Riley Lehman is just a heck of a player. I would be shocked to find out that she's not playing college ball after she graduates. I'm not exactly sure where she's at in that process right now, but she's a wing. She's one of the bigger players on the team, but she handles like a guard. She scores like a guard, but she can also get in there and bump bodies for rebounds. Riley Greenleaf, also a really solid interior player for Putnam. You know, so I like this Putnam team. I like, hopefully, their chances against Crater in the first round. I do think it's a little tough with Springfield coming in as the number one overall seed. I believe they have a player I don't know if she was the tournament MVP last year, but Deneja Romero Assam. She at least made the all-tournament team last year. And I think, you know, she's going to be kind of this could be sort of the best team, best player, you know, moving on situation. So Springfield, the Millers will be tough for just about anybody. I will say I'm hoping the Putnam meets them in the semifinals there. On the other side, another NWOC team of mine is the 7-seed LaSalle Prep. I haven't seen a ton of this team this year. I saw them a while back, actually playing this Putnam team. Ella Whedon, coach's daughter, you know, kind of continuing a legacy of successful basketball Whedons there in at LaSalle Prep. You know, I don't know that they'll be able to get past the number 2 seed like Silverton, but I also don't know all that much about Silverton. So honestly, I mean, you know how tough it is to even get to all the 6A teams, you know, that we're covering here. These 5A teams that share a city have been a little tough for me to see a bunch of this year, and Putnam, LaSalle, you know, you throw Milwaukee in there too. So I'm not as probably well-versed as I think I probably should be on these teams. But, you know, I think on paper, it looks like it's supposed to come down to Springfield, Silverton. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring here, you know, and say that I think Putnam ends up with a trophy. I don't know what color it will be yet, though. But that's kind of the most that I've got to say right now on the 5A girls tournament, without having seen most of these teams.
I think Andy nailed it.
my only feedback is I'll take Silverton and finish second because they're Silverton. So that's the only place I can go.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think of all these schools, you know, Springfield probably has some tremendous history. You know, obviously Mercedes Russell played there, and they've had some incredible teams. And but yeah, you know, number 1 seed. Yeah, I was just looking over the record, and you know, they look pretty solid. I wouldn't be a reach to pick them and go chalk.
There you have it. Well, that pretty much wraps up our prediction aspect of this podcast. Anybody have anything else they want to throw in there in regards to 6A, 5A, boys, girls, anything we missed?
You know, I just want to throw in there, you know, 4A is also going on at the same time in Forest Grove, and it's going to be a really good tournament there as well. You've got defending champs Cascade back. Philomath is the number 1 team ranked in the state, but Cascade beat them twice. So they're kind of on course to meet in the finals. But another team that's also very impressive is Baker, who actually got to see earlier this year. They're very talented. They're young. But very talented, and they're going to make some noises there as well. So it should be a fun tournament. It's also going to be the last tournament for Junction City head coach Roethlisberger. He's retiring after this year after a very, very long career. He's one of the winningest coaches in the state, in state history. So, yeah, it should be a fun time at the 4A tournament at Forest Grove.
All right, well, I think that wraps up our kind of tournament coverage. Jed, you're welcome to stay around if you want, but we're just going to go over some of the stuff we have on our websites, I think, here for the next 10 minutes or so. If you want to jettison, we'll probably see you this week.
All right, that sounds good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Jed. Appreciate it, man. Per usual.
See you, Jed.
Thanks, Jed.
I think as far as, you know, what our highlights, mine kind of start and end this week with the Banks girls basketball team that won a state championship at the 3A level. I hate this term, but I'm going to do it. I mean, I've got to give them their flowers. They did something that I don't think too many people really thought they could do, which was win. And I'm guilty of that. And I'm not afraid to say that now. I mean, I'd seen too many flaws in their game throughout the year. And the fact is they scratched and clawed their way to that final. You know, they could have lost any game along the road. I mean, you could argue they could have lost to Burns in the round of 16 at home. You easily could have argued they could have lost to in their opening game to, gosh, I'm drawing a blank on who they played Lakeview. In that first game. Lakeview.
Yeah.
You know, they won it was a tie game, and they won on a bucket at the buzzer. And then their game against Pleasant Hill, I believe, in the semifinals was not pretty. you know, it was two teams. I mean, it just wasn't. I mean, Pleasant Hill was probably, I think, one of arguably the lesser of the teams in the tournament, and neither team looked good in that game. Banks kind of made the adjustments at halftime and went in the second half and really dominated the game in the second half, but I wouldn't say that they looked particularly good doing it. And having to watch them play Corbett twice of the three times during the year, you know, it they looked a little overwhelmed by Corbett in each of the last two games they played, in the game at Corbett where Corbett just shot the lights out and pretty much buried them in the first half, and then in the league championship tournament game they it looked very similar. Corbett came out and jumped on them early, and Corbett does so many things so well from the outside, where, you know, they've got three players on the perimeter that are lights out shooters, and they got a fourth one who's a pretty darn good shooter as well. And that's what they do. They come out and they bury you, and then they play good defense as well. And so it was hard imagining in a game that meant everything that Banks was going to be able to overcome a team that honestly just probably has more talent, but they did it, and it wasn't a fluke. I mean, they just beat them, and they did it with the way they do it, which was defense. They played man defense, which they played man defense for the first time all year against Corbett. And they basically said, stay on these shooters, and we're not going to let you make threes. And they did early. Corbett led 11-0 at one point. They hit three threes to start the game, and it literally felt like, here we go again. I literally thought that. I'm like, there you go. This game is essentially over. It's playing out exactly the way the last two games have played out. Then Banks got a couple buckets, and they just shut them down defensively from there on out. And part of that was Corbett not making outside shots, but a lot of that has to do with Banks and the defense they played. And Banks killed them on the boards. I think they beat them. They out-rebounded them something like 47-31 or 47-29 or something ridiculous on the glass. And then Banks hit shots, something that they haven't done in 6 weeks. You know, Haley Evans was making shots, and she'd be the first to tell you that she's been fighting a darn near season long slump, it seems like. And she came out and in the second half and hit a three, and it seemed to really, really relax her. And then she started shooting runners. And I mean, she was just ready to go at that point. And she was knocking down shots. They got a couple other shots from their guards, and then their inside players, Madison Walker and Alex Saunders, did what they do, which was, you know, clean up in the key. And they were the better team on that day, and they deserved it. They won it, and they couldn't have been happier to do it with their defense, because that's how they kind of defined themselves all year. It was impressive. So I was happy for them. I was happy for head coach Nick Rizzo, and happy for the program that had their first state championship on the girls' side, stolen from them 4 or 5 years ago when they lost to Sutherland, when they were up by, I want to say, 18 points with maybe 2 minutes to go in the third quarter. And they completely melted down. And that was one of the toughest defeats I've seen from one of the teams I cover, was watching them melt down and lose that state title game 4 or 5 years ago. So it was kind of, I would say, justice to some extent this year to win a game that they probably weren't favored to win, but did so. So that's kind of my highlight from the coverage, which Banks' boys also finished sixth, which, you know, they would prefer not to have, but they ultimately, you know, nothing wrong with sixth place in the state. So those are kind of my highlights for this past week. You guys have anything you guys want to talk about that's kind of went on in your area last week?
Well, not necessarily that went on in my area, but I was just going to give, you know, just say a little something about this Corbett girls team. You know, just I feel awful for them that they've now lost in two consecutive state title games. You know, last year they lost to Full Omath in Coos Bay. You know, that's where the tournament was. That has not been a kind gym to them over the last 2 years. I was just looking at the numbers. You know, this is For a solid team, you know, to go and in the state title games shoot 21% from the field and almost under 21% on threes, just a terrible time for the shots not to fall. And so I don't know. I feel bad for this Corbett team, but and especially for Maddie Lanter, who's now a senior, and you know, doesn't get a chance to come back next year and fix it, because there were six players who played in the championship game this year against Banks. Five of them played in the game against Philomath the year before as well. Most of them will get to come back next year and ideally make another run and maybe get to cap it all off. I mean, that would be hopefully, I think, the great ending to this Corbett story, right? Losing a state, they were the 11 seed, so they were not supposed to be in the state championship game last year, but they made it and then came up short to Sage Kramer and Philomath, like pretty much anybody was going to. And then this year, they dropped down to 3A. They are going in as, one of the top teams in the tournament, and then they fall just short there. I think next year, if they can cap it all off with a state championship, I think that would be a pretty, pretty cool story, especially, for these Schimmel sisters, who are still there, for players like Sydney Holedge, or Ella Holedge, I should say, Taylor Donahue as well. So yeah, just wanted to give a little shout to that Corbett team that I saw a couple times last year, talked to after last year's state championship loss, saw how hard that affected them. So I'm just, kind of not in an unethical way rooting for them, but it would be cool. It would be a cool story,
Well, it's the interesting thing about them is too, it's everything you said is correct, and I think they felt like it was their year coming to this tournament. I think if you shot them full of truth serum and said, do you think you're going to win a state title when they went down there? They said, absolutely, no question about it. And I think their coach would tell you that as well. Everything kind of lined up for them. This was the 40-year anniversary to the day of them last winning a girls state basketball championship.
Oh, wow.
And they actually had like a ceremony honoring that team during halftime of the championship game. It was either the championship game or the semifinal. No, it was a championship game. They did this between all the two games. They honored the Madras team from like a million years ago that won. Sure. And they brought four guys out for that team. And then they honored that Corbett team. And I know, talking to the Banks coach, Nick Rizzo, after the semifinal game, I told him that. And he's like, are you kidding me? And he's like, what? Cause he knew like that just seems like something that's just, it's like, it's playing out for them. Right. And, there was a lot of mystical stuff going on down there last week, which is why, I had only seen Banks girls. I'd seen them like really two times and a quarter this year. I watched them play Corbett both times when they lost. And so I had not seen them win a game. And Nick Rizzo, their coach, was fully aware of that. And after they lost the league championship game, he said to me, you're not going to our playoff game Friday, are you? And he kind of wasn't kidding. Like he is like, dude, you're killing us right now. Like you're like the tiki doll from Brady Bunch for us right now. And so I did not go to their state championship opening game. I had not gotten down there yet. I followed it online. And when I got down there for their semifinal game, 30 minutes before the game when they were warming up, the press row, you may know this, Andy, the press row at Marshfield is, it's a kind of on the second tier of the court. And so I was sitting there and I just kind of yelled down to Nick, and he came up to talk to me, and he said, the first thing he said was, did you watch our game yesterday? Because they won, right? And I said, oh, yeah, I was here. I told him, I just lied to him. And I said, yeah, I was here. I saw it. And he's like, oh, thank God. He's like, I saw you had a ride up. And then after the game, which they then won, the first thing I said was, Nick, I didn't go to your game yesterday. and he just like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I didn't know that. People who aren't familiar with Nick's backstory, he had coached at Banks prior, and I think it was 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, he had to step away from the team because his wife was battling cancer. And so he resigned from the job. She ended up passing away. And then he came back, and this was his first year back coaching the team. And, he talked about that, like, Jesus, almost seems crazy that, I gave this up. I couldn't wait to get back, because he's been coaching in the middle school level. And, I think he'd always said, if I ever got a chance to coach at the high school again, I would. He gets back his first year, he wins the state championship. And, this was a team that nobody saw winning a state championship to start the year. including him. I mean, he's told me that, and that's not a secret. You know, coming out of the summer, he had real concerns about this team. And then once they got into it, he said, man, I really see something different in this team. I don't know. He thought attributed a lot of it to the volleyball success they had, which, you know, there's a few of these girls that are on the volleyball team. And he said, I don't know, something seemed to click with these girls from an attitude standpoint and a competitive standpoint and a work ethic standpoint. And he, you know, even, you know, maybe a quarter of the way, third of the way through the season, when I talked to him, he's like, man, he goes, start the year, I didn't know where we were going to end up. And he goes, at this point, I'm starting to wonder if maybe there's nobody we can't beat. And then, you know, as they went on and on, they were that number one seed, but they also played in a pretty uncompetitive, non-competitive league. So they didn't get much in the way other than Corbett. Corbett's in their league. I mean, the two arguably best teams in the state were in the same league. And besides that, it was just kind of a breeze for them. And then they get the state tournament, they're the number one seed, but they didn't really feel like the number one seed. And then, you know, it all played out as it did. So props to them. Happy for them. And they're enjoying it, that I know. Oh, yeah. Anybody, you guys want to talk about, Austin, you have any thoughts on either that or what you had?
I was going to run through some of the other small school highlights real quick. Still sticking with the girls' side, we had Jervis down in the Woodburn area. They won the 2A state title. They were trailing at halftime, and then they only gave up 4 points in the entire second half to Stanfield to win that one kind of going away. And I believe it was their first title since 1994. So been a while for Jervis. Former employee here, Tanner Russ, would tell you the Boyd sisters are happy about that one, Olivia and Izzy. Olivia named the all-tournament team. And also on the girls' side in 1A, we had Damascus Christian win the state title, which an extremely impressive feat because they took down Crane, who was three-time consecutive champs. They were looking for a four-peat. Damascus Christian got him 35-33, and you know, looking at that final score, it was probably a pretty darn good game. And continuing a great run for these Damascus Christian girls, they won the state title in volleyball. They were close last year, winning the state title in both volleyball and basketball. So they're getting it done this year. I know a lot of those girls are also track stars, so we're going to be seeing their names here in the spring too. And on the boys' side, you know, no state champions, but I think the biggest story was in 1A. You had Open Door Christian Academy just make it this far out of Troutdale. And they won their first, they won the quarterfinal game to get to the semifinals, securing a trophy for them. They lost in the semifinals by 3, and then they lost to North Douglas in the third place game. So they're going home with 5th place, but that's the first trophy for that boys basketball program ever. And I'm pretty sure that's the first trophy just overall for that entire school in a sport. Their volleyball team made it in the fall, but I believe they lost. I think they won their first game, but they lost in the second round. So Open Door Christian, cool story, bringing home their first trophy.
Well, I should real quickly touch on the 3A boys tournament as well, because I had a few teams that in there that you know, had great years. I watched all of those games, and you know, Oregon Episcopal and Westside Christian, Beaverton and Tigard Schools duked it out in the semifinals and played a really good game. Westside Christian beat Oregon Episcopal by 7 in that semifinal, and Westside Christian was the number one seed, and Jonah Jones, who's their standout player, was just incredible in the first half of that game. I think he scored 26 points in the first half. I think it was 10 of 12 from the field. Was really just unstoppable in that first half. And with that, Oregon Episcopal was right in the game. I mean, that was just a great basketball game. You know, kid definitely came down to the final minutes. And Westside Christian, and this is where the unfortunate part of the game and then ultimately the tournament. Jones, who I just mentioned, who scored 29, ended up with 29 in that game. He got hurt with about 6 minutes to go in the game, which appeared to be a pretty significant injury. It was to his hip, his right hip. And I mean, he had a hard time getting up and even walking off the court. He was in pretty bad shape. And then he went away, and I think they, you know, they stretched it to do what they could. He ended up coming back in the final, I think, minute. That's really just kind of like a pawn of sorts. But you know, they advanced to the final where they ended up playing Cascade Christian, who defeated Austin's De La Salle North Catholic team, who was the number two seed and who kind of ran through that Lewis and Clark League, which Westside Christian was in.
And they just struggled. And, you know, they obviously won their first round game and then got to the semifinals to play Cascade Christian, who Cascade Christian, you know, squeaked it out. I mean, that was a really good basketball game. The Cascade Christian ended up winning 52-51. But De La Salle North Catholic, you know, that was a heartbreaking loss for them. They ended up falling into the third place game, which you could tell they just weren't there. Oregon Episcopal beat them by 7 and really kind of led by double figures for the majority of the second half. So it's still a good year for De La Salle North Catholic, but I know they're disappointed with what ultimately turned into a fifth place finish. And then Westside Christian ended up losing by 22, I think, to Cascade Christian in the final. But, you know, that game was unfortunately over with the injury to Jones, because, you know, he came back and ended up playing in that final. But it was a significantly compromised version of himself. He just couldn't. I mean, he was grabbing that thing most of the game. You know, anything that involved him kind of twisting and landing would just re-aggravate the injury. You know, that was just a crushing blow to them. They hung around for most of the first half, and then really that third quarter, Maurer, I think, scored like 10 points in a row at one point. And between, like, I think he had 2 or 3 three-pointers. He had it coming. He must have had four or five dunks in that game, none of which were, you know, scraping the rim. I mean, he's, you know, at six, you know, Jed mentioned they list him at 7 feet. He's not 7 feet. I mean, I'd be shocked if he's 7 feet. I'd say he's, honestly, I think he's closer to 6'9", 6'10". You know, it's just to say he can pivot and get up on his tiptoes, basically, and throw it down. But, great seasons for Westside Christian and De La Salle North Catholic, and also Oregon Episcopal, who ended up third and was pretty pleased with their performance as well. That a wrap? I think that's a wrap for this week.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would throw in at this point is the one area and tournament we didn't say anything about was 4A girls. Gladstone and Baker kind of on a collision course here to maybe meet as the 1 and 2. Sorry, I think I have that backwards. Baker's number 1, Gladstone number 2, but could be on a collision course there to meet in Forest Grove. Earlier in the season, Gladstone, which is led by seniors Hannah Hopkins, Riley Grimm, Sam Dredrakowski, Emerson Stepp, Carrie Thompson. I mean, you could just keep listing the seniors. They've also got a couple really talented sophomores in Haley Monte and Ryan Jackal. But, you know, Baker beat Gladstone 39-37 in Baker a long time ago, you know, near the start of the season. Baker's led by returning first-team All-Stater Josie Ramos, who I believe is the coach's kid as well. You know, that would be a pretty awesome matchup to see here. A couple teams that could be dark horses, though. One that sticks out is this Crook County team at 11 seed. Obviously, to be in the tournament as an 11 seed, you have to pull an upset. They did. They went to LeGrand, beat them. That Crook County team, I saw them a couple times last year. Bob Boback is he's a solid coach for them, and it seems to really kind of get the best out of his team. Caitlin Weaver, though, she was a junior on last year's team. She's a senior captain now. Just really talented scorer, both, you know, I believe she was a shooter, but also could drive to the basket and get points there. And just has a lot of grit and moxie. So I don't know. As Astoria, I don't know too much about that team as the 3 seed, but, you know, I know Crook County beat Gladstone earlier this year in Prineville. So, you know, if they're able to get past Astoria, Crook County, one of those other teams that, you know, dropped from 5A into the 4A bracket this year, could be an interesting one. And then, you know, Madras is a solid team that took third place last year at state. So Baker cannot really be overlooking Madras in the first round. Sasha Esquiro and Ryland Davis are both really solid players for Madras. I don't know. We'll see, but I think this could be a pretty interesting one. Just for my own personal interest and coverage, though, I am sort of hoping that this comes down to, you know, number 1 and number 2. I think that's the best for the sport. I think it's the best for the game. I'd be really interested to see, after a 39-37 matchup in Baker this year, how Gladstone and Baker would meet up, you know, a few months later with a state championship on the line. So there's my brief little 4A girls preview to make sure we've got all of our bases covered before we get out of here. But and that's where I'll be, too. I'll be in Forest Grove this weekend. You guys are both at the Child Center. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
Very cool. Well, right, I don't have any other thoughts other than, you know, this. You know, yeah, it's coming down to it. Should I drop some news, Austin? You've got kind of a cockhead going on.
It's up to you.
Well, we'll just jump into it real quick. This will be my last week on the pod, and not just on the pod, but with Pamplin in general. I am leaving to pursue other opportunities and other fields, probably. This is a tough job, but it's a really enjoyable one. When you have your, when you can get around it and, you know, when the timing's working well and when you aren't feeling too overworked, you know, this job is super fun. But yeah, you know, it's just, I don't think this is exactly the industry where I should be. So I'm going to take a step back, find out some other, you know, explore some other avenues. I'll still be doing some college basketball writing as my side gig. But yeah, just wanted to say it's been, you know, been a heck of a ride with you guys. I've enjoyed, you know, obviously the pod, but just working with you in general. And looking forward to ending on a high note with some really exciting state basketball this weekend.
Well, like I echo everyone's sentiments, probably sad to see you go, Andy, but we wish you well. And soon on this pod, we will be introduced to whoever it is that fills Andy's spot. We're interviewing people now, so in weeks to come, you will meet someone. You'll meet the new Andy, if you will, and you'll meet the new Tanner too. There, newer versions of them are coming. So, Andy, best of luck. Quite a deep dive, I think we went into the state tournaments today, and for 2 hours, for goodness sakes. And we will have more next week on kind of the 6A, 5A, 4A events as they wrap up, and we say goodbye to the winter sports seasons and eventually get into the spring sports of softball, baseball, track and field, lacrosse, God knows what else, tennis, golf. It's all out there. So
equestrian.
Equestrian. We got it all. So yeah, another pod down. Thanks for listening. If you are, spread the word, and we will see you all next week.